Vayigash is incredibly rich with Rambans, incredibly rich with fascinating comments of the Ramban. I want to take a look at two small ones, which both relate to different nuances in the stories of Parshas Vayigash, and both bring out very, very lemasa and very ambitious messages for us. So let's take a look. Give me a moment, I'll share the screen. If you have an actual chumash with a Pirush Ramban, that would be amazing. If not, please pay attention to the video screens. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Sheila. Okay. So let's start with the end. Let's start with the end of Parshas Vayigash. Parshas Vayigash opens at the dramatic climax, the moment when Yehuda thinks and the Shvatim think that everything's about to come crashing down, and Yehuda's making his final plea to Yosef to spare them. And then in a moment, everything turns around. Yosef reveals himself, and Ha'od Avichai, the brothers in a moment realize so much. The Amoraim speak about the Oila la'osa busha, oila la'osa klima, to consider that moment. They had a whole picture of what life was like, and they had a whole understanding in their head of how things worked, and in a moment, everything turned around. In a moment, he reveals himself as Yosef, and everything that they had understood about the last 2 decades is turned on its head. Historically, morally, all of a sudden, what they thought they're doing the right thing, doing the wrong thing, this makes sense, it doesn't make sense, all in a moment, everything was put into a different perspective. And Chazal point out that if you consider that moment, if you try to imagine what that must have been like, it gives us insight into Lasid Lavo, Kadosh Baruch Hu will reveal himself, and then suddenly everything's going to be different. And suddenly things that didn't make sense would be put into a different perspective. Things that we thought weren't fair, or we thought, you know, I did that and really that was right, and he did that really was wrong. Suddenly everything is radically and immediately changed. And then the story continues with, and now everything is sort of playing itself out. Yosef has the brothers go back and bring in Yaakov Avinu and the whole family. Yaakov is hesitant about going to Gullus. Shmuel Hashem tells him, this is the right thing, this is where I want you to go. And he goes down to Gullus, he meets Paro, he meets Yosef, he meets Paro. And Yosef settles his brothers in Goshen. He settles the growing Jewish people in Goshen. And you would have thought that the story ends right there. We're done. And now we can move on to Parshas Vayechi. The end of Yaakov's life and the brachas to Ephraim and Manasseh and the brachas to the Shvatim. But the Torah doesn't end Vayigash there. Beginning in Pasuk Yudalid, you have a series of psukim that seem to be unnecessary. We're not sure why this is in Chumash. The Torah tells us a whole series of psukim describing Yosef and how Yosef managed the economy of Mitzrayim. And you hear that Yosef, that plan that we had heard several parshas ago, that he had laid out to Paro about gathering all the tvua over the Shnei Hasava and then distributing over the Shnei Rav. So now we watch Yosef actually do it. And so over the course of the Shnei HaSava, he is being Malakeh, he's gathering all the produce, and then year after year, over the course of the years of Rav, the Mitzrim come to Paro, and who sends them to Yosef, and he sells them the Tevuah, and slowly he aggregates all the wealth of Mitzrayim on behalf of Paro. So the question is, what do you need to hear this for? Meaning, Yosef had responsibility, so obviously he carried out his responsibility. It was important that it happened. But why is it in Chumash? Why is the Torah telling us this? Where's the, as we've seen so many times in the past, the Gemara in Megillah? Nevuah shehutzra chaladaros nechtava. Nevuah shehutzra chaladaros lo nechtava. What's the tzorach chaladaros? Why do you and I, sitting in New York and New Jersey, need to know that that 3,500 years ago Yosef implemented this whole plan? What's in the Nevuah shehutzra chaladaros? So let's take a look at it. The Ramban is very brief, and if you sneeze, if you blink, you miss it. But if you look carefully, he's saying the kashya and he's giving two terutzim each, which is very important. Let's take a look. Here, Parak Mem Zayin, Pasuk Yud Dalet. You can look inside, or you have it on the screen. Vayelakei Yosef is kol hakesef. So the Ramban says, Kidarko does not actually directly ask the kasha. The kasha is implied. Sipra kasev zeh. The Gemara in Bechala Parsha, the Torah tells us the story. The Torah completes the whole episode of Yosef's political leadership. Why? That's the kasha. Well, why is this in Chumash? Number one and number two. Number one, Lahodia Ma'alos Yosef Bechachma Betevuna Uvedas. Number one, to tell us the madregos of the strengths and the qualities of Yosef in his wisdom. Bechachma betuvuna uvadas. We'll come back to that in a moment. And then he says a second answer. V'chihaya ish emunim. Number two, to tell you that he was a person of extraordinary integrity, extraordinary honesty. Shehevi kol hakesef beis paro. All of the money came to Paro. Lo asa li atzma otzros kesef matmoni mistarim be'eretz Mitzrayim. There was no secret bank account. There was no stash. There was no slush fund where Yosef was squirreling away some of the money to keep for himself. Neither in Mitzrayim o l'shalcho le'eretz Canaan. There was no offshore bank account. There was no Canaries Island account or Swiss bank account where Yosef was hiding the money. He could have sent it back to Eretz Canaan. He could have sent it offshore. And he could have kept it for himself. That would have been Sheker. That would have been Geneva. It would have been incredibly easy for Yosef to do it. But he didn't. He didn't. Nasan lamelech habotech bo. Kol hakesef. The king who trusted him, Paro had, as is clear in the psukim, and the psukim make this point in these closing psukim vayigash. The people come to Paro and says, "You got to go to Yosef." You know, Paro has total reliance and total trust in Yosef, and Yosef deserves that trust. He is not mishalim ra tachas tova. Kanalos ha'adama v'gam ha'gufos. He aggregates the entire wealth of Mitzrayim. Not only the cash, the land, the people, everything. And just consider for a moment what that means. The entire wealth of Mitzrayim passes through Yosef's hands over the course of a couple of years. In contemporary terms, that's probably trillions of dollars. Trillions. And not just 1 or 2 trillion like the market cap of some of the big tech companies. We're talking many, many trillions of the entire wealth of Mitzrayim. Not just the annual GDP, all of the aggregated wealth, all of the real estate, all of the cash, all of the everything. The people sold themselves as avadim. Everything, trillions upon trillions upon trillions of dollars are passing through Yosef's hands. And who is looking over his shoulder? Nobody. He is in charge. He is Paro's golden boy. Paro just totally trusts him. And he could have so easily just taken. And I haven't taken everything. know, he could have even been more a heter. Of course, I'll give Paro most of it, but, you know, agent's fee of 10%. So I'll give Paro $20 trillion, and I'll keep $2 trillion for myself. Yeah. A billion here. What's a couple billion dollars between friends? Mamish, no sticky fingers. He was an ish emunim. It's arguable that this Nisayon may have been an even greater. We think about Yosef as an incredible Baal Nisayon. Yosef is the Mid of Yisod, the Mekubalim describe. Yosef is a man of extraordinary self-control. We often point to his self-control in the story of Eishes Potiphar, where as a younger person, she's after him day after day, day in, day out, trying to convince him to be mezana with her, to commit adultery with her. And he's machzik ma'amad. He holds strong and withstands day after day after day of temptation. And that's a massive nisayon. But it's arguable that this was a far, far greater nisayon for years, trillions and trillions of dollars. And no one would be the wiser. How does he do it? How Taka does he do it? Ramban tells us. You know how he did it? Omotza bezechein gam kein be'enei ha'am. The psukin Ramban points out, if you look in the Chumash goes on to say that the people loved him. You would have thought that people would have been very, very resentful of Yosef. Look at what he's doing to them. No. There are two ways they could have looked at it. Yosef is saving them. Yosef has been planning for years for their benefit. Yosef has been planning years in advance to save the lives and the health of all the Mitzrim. And he did. That was accurate. But they could have seen it in the opposite way. They could have seen him as taking advantage of them. They could have seen him as demeaning them. And they didn't. Matzah b'zechein, gam kein b'enei am. It could have gone either way. And indeed, the people had a very, very favorable, positive view of Yosef. Why? It could have gone either way. How was he zocha? How was he zocha that the people loved him? That his approval ratings were amazing. Ki Hashem hu amatzliach esireyev. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving hatzlacha to those who have Yirah Shamayim. That's what the Rabban, I think, is saying, is that when the psukim end by talking about the chen that Yosef had in the eyes of the people, that's an expression of what it was that allowed him to succeed this Nisan in the first place, and that's Yirah Shamayim. He had an incredibly keen sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his life, like we learned the other week in Mesilas Yishar, in the Hakdama. Yirah Shamayim is the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a reality in my life. I have a God consciousness. Or the sense of the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in my life is real and almost tangible. And that's something that, if you think about it, something that we've seen about Yosef throughout the psukim, throughout the last few parashas, the Shem Shamayim is Shagur B'Fiv. And he, you know, at all times, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has helped me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give me the insight. It wasn't me with Ribbono Shalom. There's an Anava that's born out of his Yirah Shamayim. And there's a pride in his Yirah Shamayim. He has no problem telling anybody that his life revolves around the Ribbono Shalom. He comes to Mitzrayim, Shem Shamayim Shagur B'Fiv. He'll tell it. He'll talk about it in prison. He'll talk about it to Potiphar. He'll talk about it to Paro. He's incredibly proud of the role that of his Emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the role that he sees HaKadosh Baruch Hu playing in his life. And that's what gave him the strength to be Amud B'Nisayon. Because it's not true that no one was watching. No human being was looking over his shoulder. But he knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was. He knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew what he was up to. He knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu cared what he was up to. He knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had standards for him that he was determined to live up to. And he accessed that. There was a sense of Masora from Yaakov Avinu that kept that Yirah Shamayim powerful. And that Yirah Shamayim that allowed Yosef to be Omer B'Nisayon the result of the schar for that was also the extraordinary hatzlacha that he had. Practical hatzlacha and social hatzlacha. That is, he had the insight in terms of interpreting the dreams and not only recognizing the problems but being a solution seller. He came to Paro and said, here's your problem and here's what you ought to do about it. And he was able to, and he had the hatzlacha to carry this out, and he had the hatzlacha in terms of the way in which people reacted to him with extraordinary positivity. Matzachen, says the Ramban, based on the Psukim. Matzah b'zachen, gam kein ve'eni ha'am, ki Hashem hu matzliach ha'sereyav. Now, that's the Ramban's second teretz. What's the Nevuah Shehutzrach Eldoros? What are we supposed to learn from this? So answer number two, Ramban says, is Yosef is a model of incredible integrity, incredible amida b'nisayon, in nisyonos of gezel. And it's something that a person could tap into. In your lives, it is likely, just statistically speaking, that probably many of you, at some point over the next couple of decades, will at least once, if not more, be in a situation, likely professional, maybe personal, where there's a big nisayon of dishonesty. It's part of life. There's a reason why the reason why so much of halacha is choshen mishpat. This is a part of life. There may be pressure at work to sign a report that's not 100% honest. You're the accountant, needs to sign off on the audit. And the company that you're auditing is being a little bit rosy in how they're presenting themselves to their stockholders. They're not absolutely lying. They'll say it's just, more optimistic predictions, v'chulu, v'chulu, v'chulu. It's not yosher. It's not the highest standard of integrity. Maybe you're an engineer who's managing a project, a construction project, a public works project, and there's pressure to get it done. There's pressure to get it done ahead of schedule. There's pressure to get it done, in less time and with less money than we had anticipated. And there's pressure from above to cut corners. Of course, we're going to have some sort of fire safety system, but it's not totally up to code. It's not really the standard. It's good enough. And there's pressure to sign off on it. And you're the engineer supposed to sign off on moving this forward, even though you know that it's not really being done properly. And the corners are being cut. This is part of life. This is part of life. Both those examples I gave are just two out of millions of examples one could give. Those examples that people have told me that they were at work. One was an accountant, the other was an engineer. And they were in those very situations. There was a lot of pressure to sign off, and both of them refused. Both in the Yir Shamayim, they channeled their inner Yosef, and they said, no, HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects more of me. One of them lost his job over it, and ultimately found a new job, but he was not going to sign off on something that wasn't Emes, that wasn't Yosher. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of each of us. And that's Nevuah, that's certainly Tzorech L'doros, is incredible to'elas, in the closing Pesukim of Yigash, to give us a picture, Demus Diukno Shel Yosef, to have an image in my head what it looks like when a Jew is scrupulously honest in ways that are tempting to not be. So that was the second practical lesson that the Ramban sees in these closing psukim. What was the other one? The first one. That was a little mysterious. The second one he explains. He talks it out. Ish amunim, that he's an honest person. What was the first one? Lahodia malos Yosef bechachma betvuna uvedas. Goal number one of these psukim is to tell me about Yosef's intellectual strengths. He was a man of extraordinary chachma, tevuna, and das. What does that mean? Why is that at Tzorech L'doros? Again, it was important that Yosef had those miles. What do I need to know? It's a biography of Yosef HaTzadik. You should know the Yosef HaTzadik, when he was 4 years old, he knew all Shas. Why? What's the Tzorech L'doros for us? And what does he even mean? So a couple years ago, Talmud pointed out that if you, there is a Rabban earlier, back in Perek Mem Aleph, who uses similar language. When Yosef initially presents himself in Parshas Miketz to Paro, and as we were saying a few minutes ago, Paro presents the dreams, and Yosef not only interprets dreams, which means he identifies the upcoming problem, but he's also a solution seller. He presents Paro not only with, okay, the dream said that there's going to be a famine. He said, Yosef goes on to say, and here's how I think you should deal with it. Here's the plan. Paro's response, and Yosef says, you're going to need to hire a person who's going to oversee this. And the way that Yosef describes the resume that you're looking for is here in Perek Mem Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Yere Paro Ish Navon V'Chacham. Paro needs to find someone who's a Navon and a Chacham, who has Bina and Chachma. What does that mean? Amarlo, Rabban says, She Yitztarech L'Ish Navon V'Chacham. He explains to Paro, you're going to need a man who has both Bina and Chachma. She Yimemuna Kol Haaretz. He's going to be in charge of this whole project. He's going to be the national director. V'yafked ot pikidim tachtav. And then he's going to have staff working for him. There's going to be some bureaucracy. This fellow you're going to hire is going to oversee the whole project. He'll have other people working for him. Sheyeh lechu ba'aretz. He'll have staff that are roving throughout the land. V'yikbetu is kol ochel. They're going to be gathering, scattered, distributed throughout the country, running centers where they're aggregating all the excess tefua. Why do they need to the pikidim? You can't have the director can't be running around the entire country. And he says, the Rambam says, and let's look at those qualifications that Yosef had listed. He needs to be a navon and a chacham. What does that mean? So let's see what Rabban says, and let's try to translate into our terminology. Navon, he has to be number one in Navon, which means sheyeda lenahel am eretz Mitzrayim balachem lefi hataf miado v'laseislem kidei chiyusam. He's going to need to guide the people, guide Mitzrayim, and make sure that each one has what he needs. V'yimkar, make sure and v'yimkar mosar. He's going to be distributing to the citizens of Mitzrayim what they need, and if there's excess, he'll sell it to foreign countries to add to Paro's wealth. And Chacham, sheyeda lekayem hatavu shlo teirakev. Chacham refers to the insight that he'll bring in terms of how to preserve the tevua. You're going to be amassing and storing tevua for several years. You want to make sure that you don't lose it to rot. That would be horrific. You invest all this time and effort into building reserves of grain, and then when you need them, they're spoiled. That's not going to help. So he has to be someone who knows how to preserve the tevua. She'arev in kol min, davar b'kayimah sobetivo. For each type of produce, you're going to have wheat and you're going to have pepper, whatever it is that you're preserving, probably not peppers, but whatever it is you're preserving, each species, you're going to have the right preservatives. It says Chazal and Masech HaShabbos speak about chumtin. Shezki Rabbi Hussein, they speak about chumtin is a particular type of preservative that you used for wheat. And he says Chazal speak in other places about different types of preservatives for different types of produce. So that's the Chachma. He's going to need to have Bina and Chachma. So what would you say in our language? In a word, what's Bina? In a word, what's Chachma?
Well,
feel free to unmute yourselves.
Chachma's understanding. Chachma's wisdom. Bina's understanding.
Oh. Chachma, Chaim says, is wisdom. And Bina is understanding. Good. And how does that translate here? What he said, Chachma means...
I think Chachma is like a prerequisite, that he's a wise person. And Bina means he knows what to do with the situation.
Ah, right. So Chachma, think about that. So Ramban said, the Chachma was that he's a good technician. Right? He knows how to preserve the Tevua. He's an engineer. He knows that preserve the tefuah. No, as you said, wisdom, knowledge. He has ideas. He has the technical ideas in terms of how to preserve the tefillah. The bina was that he's a good manager. He knows how to handle people. He knows how to handle the situation. He's going to make sure people need. He's going to oversee the flow of the tefillah. That the people need what they get. We're going to make sure the right amounts get to the right places. This was centralized planning. He's going to think about how to what the excess is and how to generate extra revenue by selling the excess to foreign countries. So we're talking about a person that's both that brings a lot of miles to the table. Like Chaim said, he has the technical wisdom, and then he has the insight and the understanding how to manage the situation. An interesting blend of qualities. But Vayter, you wonder. So bringing it back to Parshas Vayigash, so the Rabban says, you see, Hitaka did have milus in Chachma, Tevuna, and Das. Not only Chachma and Navon, but also Das. So now we're still wondering, okay, so in Yosef had said in Tol Power in Mikes, you can need someone who has the technical know-how and the insight into people. You need both dimensions. And Paro had said, well, no one better than you, Yosef. So the Rabbanan say, well, and now we see everything actually play out. And indeed, he did have the Chachma and the Tevuna. So now when you're wondering, how about that Das? What does that mean? And also, Vayter. Why do we need to know this? It was important for Mitzrayim 3,500 years ago that Yosef indeed had the necessary qualities to make it work. So that was very, very relevant to the lives of millions of people at the time. And millions of people's lives were saved because Yosef, in fact, was qualified to manage this project, and he did it very adjointly. That's great. But Vayter, what's the Toalos Ledoros? Why do we need to know that Yosef was qualified for the job? You look at this Ramban and you still wonder. Why is it important for us, and what's Das? And presumably, the Ramban is telling us some Mida that we can be inspired, that we can learn from, that we can adopt. So the second teretz was Yosef's integrity. And that, as we began to talk about before, definitely something that's going to come up for us in our own situations as well. It could be what the Ramban is driving at. Over the years, I've wondered about this Ramban. And maybe what part of what the Ramban is driving at is that Yosef had the Yosef had the Chachma and the Tevuna. Yes, Yosef had he had what it took to do it. He had the technical knowledge to make this happen, how to preserve the Tevuah. He had the insight into people, into situations, into organization. He had the management capacity, the Tevuna, to make the system flow well. But there are a lot of people who know what you should do, but don't actually get it done. Ramchal writes in later Mesilas Yesharim, when he talks about Zrizus, he talks about there's one type of Zrizus which is getting things started, and there's another type of Zrizus which is once things are started, seeing them through to fruition, seeing the project through, getting to the finish line. Some contemporary writers refer to that as being a starter and being a closer. And some people are more naturally starters, and other people are more naturally closers. Yeah, you have the vision guy who has great ideas, and has a lot of energy, and will get things started. But oftentimes a starter, once things are rolling, is not going to have the same capacity to keep things going to the close. As a matter of fact, the dean of Sy Sims, who some of you may have met, Dean Noam Wasserman, was a very fine Talmud Chacham and a massive Masmid, and probably many of you have seen him in the Gluck Beis Meresh and Night Seder. One of his primary professional, his academic interest is, and he's written at least one book about this, the founder's dilemma. The fact that in many startups, the person who's the entrepreneur who launches a company, once the company grows, often is no longer a very good CEO. That's part of the founder's dilemma. or oftentimes the guy who gets started, once a company gets big, he no longer has the tools to keep it going. It's a different skill set that you need. He was a great starter, but later on as things grow, it's not the same. And particularly when you have a particular project you want to get done, you might have the guy who's a great starter, and you might have a different guy who wouldn't have the creativity to think of an idea or the boldness, you know, to say, let's do this, let's, you know, this is crazy, we're going to do it, we're going to get started. But someone else might be a good closer. Once things are rolling, I can step in and I can manage the project and I can keep things going and dot all the I's and cross all the T's and keep people motivated and keep us going and get to the finish line. And that's what Ramchal talks about in Zrizus. Is Zrizus kodem haschalas ha-maisa and Zrizus la'achar haschalas ha-maisa. There's this reason to getting things started, and then there's Zrizus in seeing things through, maintaining things, sustaining things to fruition. And I believe what the Rabban is saying is lahodia milas Yosef b'chachma b'svuna uvedas. The Torah is painting a picture of Yosef as someone who had both aspects of Zrizus. He was a starter and he was a closer. Yosef is the ultimate vision person. Not only literally, he's associating Chumash with so many visions, so many chalomos, his own chalomos, and interpreting the chalomos of others. But even in the more contemporary sense of he's a man with vision. He comes to Paro and tells Paro, here's your problem and here's your solution. Here's what you need to do. Here's the big idea. And he's the man with the big idea, and he's also the man who had the tools to see through to the end, and the midos, the tenacity, to the consistency, to keep the hasmada, to keep at it and to see it all the way through. And that the both aspects of Zri, he embodied both aspects of Zrizus. And that's very, very significant. And that's a big limud l'doros, to know, as he said, lesson number two is to know that we have far greater capacity for amida b'nisayon than we think. A Jew can have even more self-discipline than we think, and particularly in the world of integrity and honesty. I might think that's overwhelming. You can do it. Yosef had trillions of dollars flowing through his hands with no human oversight whatsoever, and he was only, the Torah tells us, and every single dollar landed where it was supposed to land. No dollars landed in Yosef's pocket illegitimately. Nothing landed in an offsite account. Everything was kasher v'yasher. That's number one. And number two, to know that you are more capable than you think. You're more competent than you think possible. That you can get things started, you can see things through. That's also an area for growth. And you might look at yourself in the mirror and say, yeah, you know, I'm not such a closer. So many things I've started, there was a big launch, and then it sort of just puttered out. Okay, so that's an area in which I want to grow. So I'm identifying that I don't yet have as many kochos in being a closer as I would like, so I want to work on my zrizus la'achar haschalas ha'maisa. Or I might say, I can see things through, but sometimes I have dreams of what could be, and I don't act on them. Okay, that's the mila of being a starter. I can channel that part of my inner Yosef. Lahodia malas Yosef b'chachma b'svuno v'das, to tell us, to describe for us, to sketch for us Yosef's milas in envisioning and the tools to get it done and to see it through to the finish line. Not just to tell us to praise Yosef, but to inspire us to try to grow into this as well. And then one more Yosef lesson. One more Yosef lesson. If we're looking for Yosef's capacity, and Yosef's, particularly Yosef's self-discipline and self-control, thinking about the second half of this Ramban, his self-discipline and self-control, not only with Eishes Potiphar, but with the the sum total of all the wealth of national wealth of Mitzrayim. Let's take a look at one more Ramban. Let's just bring it up. Earlier in Parshas Vayigash, we began with this Ramban in Perek Mem Zayin, the very end of Vayigash. Now let's go here. Perek Mem Hei, Pasuk Chav Zayin. He addresses an interesting question. He addresses a fascinating question. The brothers come back. There's the great denouement. Everything unfolds. The brothers discover who Tzafnath Paneach really is. He's really Yosef. He unmasks himself, figuratively speaking, to his brothers. Not that he took his beard off, but he reveals his identity. And the brothers come home. They're tearful. They're shocked, and then the tears come. And they reunite, and then they head home. They head home. They come back to Yaakov Avinu. Vayidabre Elav is called Divrei Yosef, and they tell Yaakov everything that Yosef had said. They tell Yaakov everything Yosef had said. What exactly did they tell him? It's a deliciously ambiguous phrase. They told him, Es kol divrei Yosef. What exactly are divrei Yosef? A lot had happened over the last 2+ decades. What did they tell their father? Yeroi liyal derech hapshat. Rabban thinks, I think al pipshuto, shelo hugad liyako kol yomo ki echav machru es Yosef. Rabban raised a fascinating question. What did Yaakov know? The brothers discover that Yosef is alive and well in Mitzrayim. And they come back and tell their father. And that's preferish in the Pesukim. Yosef is alive and well in Mitzrayim. V'chiyu ha-shalit. Not only is he alive, not only is he well, he's running the show. He's running the country. He's in charge. He's risen to the highest echelons of power. So that Yaakov definitely hears. But the question is, how much of the beginning of the story did he hear? The part that the brothers themselves knew from the outset, maybe they never told their father that. Did they ever tell, that's the question Ramban raises, did they ever tell their father how Yosef got to Mitzrayim? Because remember, up until this point, Yaakov was working on the assumption that Yosef is where? Right, in Shemayim. They thought that he had been eaten by some wild animal. So all of a sudden they said, no, Yosef's alive! And not only alive, well, not only well, who are Shalit? He's the Mamish on top of the world. And how did he get there? So Yaakov starts to wonder, ooh, well, that's fascinating. Baruch Hashem, he wasn't killed. I had thought Tarov Taraf Yosef. In fact, how did he get to Mitzrayim? Now the brothers knew how he got to Mitzrayim, presumably. Pshur Son Mikra is that they sold him. They knew how he got there. They knew exactly how he got there. Did they keep the charade going or not? So we usually assume that Yosef knew everything. Now Yaakov knew everything. Everything's on the table. The Rabban says, I don't think so. Rabban says, I don't think the brothers ever told their father that they had been the cause, the vector, that sent their brother down to Mitzrayim. It was never told to Yaakov. Choshav, what did he think? Yaakov, Ramban surmises, Yaakov must have thought, I guess he was lost. They had been captured, kidnapped by some anonymous group, some anonymous gang of people, and sold them into slavery. Why does he know this? We're going to see soon. Ki echav lo ratzu l'hagid lo chatasam. The brothers didn't want to tell their father their chet. And that became even clearer to them. It was a chet. Perhaps at the time, they believed the way doing was correct. That their brother was a rodent, their brother was a danger. And now it became clear that the dreams were real, that the dreams were not, they now realized, that the dreams were not Yosef's attempt to make something up, to toss them under the bus and make them into the next generation of Esav. Perhaps that's what they had thought previously, you know? Avraham Avinu's legacy goes only to Yitzchak. Yitzchak's legacy goes only to Yaakov. Yosef is trying to position himself, the brothers think, when they were younger. Yosef is trying to position himself to be the sole heir of Yaakov. So, and he's making up these dreams. It now becomes clear in retrospect. Number one, the dreams were not made up. The dreams were real. And not only were the dreams that Yosef actually had, but they also were not nonsense. These were messages from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They watched with their own eyes. They were part of the fulfillment of the dreams. They also realize now that Yosef was not out to get them, and that Yosef was not trying to disown them. Yosef was not trying to destroy them. They're all going to be Shiv Teka. They're all going to be part of Yaakov Avinu's legacy. They're all going to be heirs to Yaakov Avinu. And now they realize that means that there was no justification for what they did to Yosef. It was a chet. It was a terrible. Now they realize it was a terrible, terrible chet. But they didn't. Ramban said he didn't want to tell their father about their chet. Now the danger is if they tell their father, he may curse them horribly. He's going to disown them for the way they treated Yosef. And the concern that Yosef might curse them was not an unfounded concern. For much smaller things, I don't know how to measure, but for other chatam, which one might argue were smaller chatam, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi on the receiving end of a fierce klala from Yaakov Avinu. If they would have told him that they sold their brother down to Mitzrayim, they were very scared of how Yaakov would react. So that's what I'm about to take. The brothers never, you notice his language was lo hugad. It was never told to Yaakov. It was never told means, number one, the brothers didn't tell him. And number two, who else didn't tell him? Who else? Yosef. Yosef couldn't tell them. Right. The Divrei Yosef. What did Yosef want to tell him? And what did Yosef tell him once Yaakov actually came down to Mitzrayim and they spent decades together in Mitzrayim? Yosef b'musaro hatov l'ratz l'hagidlo. He says, Yosef, with his incredible sense of musar, with his incredible sense of midos and of ethics, didn't want to tell his father. Wow.
Well, I mean, isn't that just like, why would he want to incriminate his brothers? He's just being like a nice guy. And it's like, oh, you know, I have no stake. You know, he specifically tells them, you know, it's all good. You know, it's min hashamayim. You know, he has no reason to tell his father.
Absolutely, absolutely. You're absolutely correct in principle. You're absolutely correct that Yosef ought to have and did indeed make a cheshbon that there's nothing's gained by my telling my father now. So it was going to cause him unnecessary aggravation. What does he need to know? Baruch Hashem, we're all okay. And Yosef makes it makes the calculus that there's no toelos in telling his lashon hara, and so he does not. And no toelos, it's going to hurt the brothers. It's going to hurt his father. There's no point in telling. You are in principle absolutely correct. And the Ramban goes on. We'll return to this in just a moment. The Ramban goes on to prove this after having spent the first two-thirds of this paragraph this, you know, unpacking what this looked like, his theory that Yosef, that Yaakov never knew. He goes on to prove it because he says that, you remember at the very end of Chumash Bereishis, after Yaakov Avinu passes away, the brothers are frightened that now Yosef is gonna take revenge. Now they remembered Uncle Esav had said, "When Yitzchak passes away, then I'm gonna go get my brother." So they're worried. Maybe Yosef was being nice to them because he didn't want to cause Yaakov aggravation. Now that Yaakov passed away, they figured they are goners. He has all the power, and now he's gonna take revenge. Now he's just gonna gonna slice them and dice them. It's all over. And you remember what happens next week's Sedra. If they send a message, Avicha Tzivu Femo Soleimor, they made up a story that Yaakov Avinu had told them, tell Yosef, you know, to be kind to your brothers. Now, how do we know that was, the story was made up? Ilu yada Yaakov Avinu zeh hayiroy lahem shiyichalu pnei avim v'moso letzavas is Yosef mipiv. If Yaakov actually knew what had happened, then the most sensible approach would be for them to make sure that Yaakov tells Yosef directly. This is pretty important. Their survival depends on this. There's a lot more ne'manos. We've been dealing with the ne'manos issues in Bava Basra. There's a whole lot more ne'manos if Yaakov, you know, it's going to be far more impactful if Yosef hears from Yaakov directly, you know, be kind to your brothers after I'm gone, as opposed to, oh, Abba said to tell you that you should be kind to us after he's gone. Good. Which is more strategic? Clearly, there's far more impact. If you're worried about Yosef's angry reaction, it's obviously far more beneficial to have Yaakov tell Yosef directly. So why didn't they tell Yaakov to tell Yosef? Why did they ask their father, please speak to Yosef? The answer is obviously because Yaakov didn't tell the rabbi. Yaakov didn't know. And they weren't about to tell him. So instead, after he passes away, they tell a lie in order to save their lives. They think they're in mortal danger. So they create a lie. At that point, this is Pikuach Nefesh, they thought. Safi Pikuach Nefesh. They make up the story. But if Yaakov had known, it would have made sense to ask them, to beg of their father before he passes away. He should tell Yosef directly. That he should be kind to his brothers, and then he would be more likely to listen. His father told him directly, be kind to your brothers, that's going to have the most impact. They would have no need to make up a story. They could have had Yaakov actually, truly, tell Yosef directly, take good care of your brothers, be kind to your brothers, it wouldn't be in any danger. So Ramban says, from the fact, he says, I infer from the story at the end of Vayechi that Yaakov must never actually have known. And here we come back to the point that Joey was making before. What's remarkable about this, what's significant for us, is that Lo Hu Gadlo, he was not told, means not only that the brothers didn't tell him, we understand well the brothers' interest, their fear of telling him, but Yosef didn't tell. And Joey's absolutely correct, our own Yosef, that absolutely, al pi cheshbon, what Yosef did makes perfect sense. And that there's no toelos. It's going to hurt the brothers, and frankly, it's going to hurt Yaakov. Imagine the aggravation Yaakov would have felt to know that now finally he's at peace. He knows that, you know, Baruch Hashem, Yosef is okay. Now he has to hear that, in fact, his own sons, Yosef's brothers, were the cause of it. What's the point? But at the same time that you're right, you know, from a distance, it makes rationally speaking, it makes perfect sense. What Yosef did was clearly correct and the obviously right choice. But stop for a moment and imagine you're in this situation. Haga b'yatzmecha, hagiyu b'yatzmecha. The extent to which Yosef felt horrifically mistreated by his brothers. Imagine for a moment. I told you before that, you know, it's arguable that the Nisayon, Yosef's Nisayon with honesty, was even greater, perhaps far greater, than the Nisayon of Kedusha and Tara, avoiding Arayos, avoiding adultery with Eshes Potiphar. Perhaps this third Nisayon is even greater. Can you imagine how tempting it must have been for a lesser man to finally get back at your brothers? And I do this, I'm just telling Abba what happened. And there probably were, honestly, if you think about it, try to place on your head what it actually looked like. It wasn't just that Yosef sent a message to his father and the initial divrei Yosef and didn't include, by the way, my brother sold me down the river, but I'm still okay. They spent decades together in Mitzrayim. The Chumash doesn't tell us what was going on. But the Rabban says, if you get to the end of Vayechi, you know what didn't happen. What never happened in all those decades is that Yosef never, ever, ever told his father what really happened. And there must have been, you have to imagine, many conversations in which it would have been natural to mention it. Probably many conversations that Yosef had to very carefully steer around the topic to avoid even dropping a hint to what had happened. So not only that he didn't go out of his way to tell his father, which a lesser person certainly would have, a little bit of nekama, a lot of nekama, but for decades and decades, it said, you know, with Eishes Potiphar, it's probably a matter of days, weeks, maybe months. The money in Mitzrayim was a matter of several years. The keeping his mouth shut vis-a-vis his father, to not cause his father aggravation, to not put his brothers in a compromised position, decades. Decades and decades. For most of Yosef's life, he was keeping this quiet. And he was studiously avoiding telling his father. That's an extraordinary nisayon. That's extraordinary. Extraordinary gevurah. Extraordinary koach. Wow. The Musa, the Rabban says such a low key way. Yosef, b'musa ro hatov l'ratzel agidlo. B'musa ro hatov. Wow. Halavai, we should have a drop in the ocean of Yosef's b'musa hatov. But this is really a tremendous amount to learn from and a tremendous amount to be inspired by. To channel your inner Yosef. This is the koach that a Jew can have. And the koach that we can have, as Joey said, to make a cheshbon and to think before you speak, to make a cheshbon. There's no point in saying this. There is no toelos in saying this. I'm not going to say it. It's tempting, and a part of me would love to get back at them and to let it slip. I'm not going to, I'm not lying. Might not even tell the whole story. Just drop a hint. Yaakov was an incredibly wise man. Yosef could have just dropped a hint once over the decades and Yaakov would have figured it out. And he kept his mouth, he kept his lips buttoned because it was the right thing to do. That is, there are times when the right thing to do is to share. And again, we were talking the other week. There have been sadly too many stories of abuse have come out. And let me rephrase that. Sadly, there have been so many situations of abuse. And part of what multiplies the situations of abuse, part of what multiplies the episodes of abuse, the number of times that any abuser abuses, is the fact that people don't talk. When people don't talk and don't share, that allows abusers to keep on working their nefarious, horrific work. Abusers are often very good at manipulating people around them into not sharing. That's part of their nefarious malacha. Sometimes there are things that dafka have to, that should be shared. Other times, there are things that should not be shared. Here, with Yosef, there was no point, there was no toelos. In a situation of abuse, there's incredible toelos in sharing the information in an effective way with the authorities. With Yosef, it was a situation where there was no toelos in sharing. Yosef had a lot of desire to share it. There would have been incredible nekama opportunity to share it. But Yosef made a chayim. There is no toelos in sharing. Bygones, let bygones be bygones. And mochel. And this also, in closing, by the way, what enabled Yosef to have the strength to be only in this Zion as well? Who?
Realization of Hashem.
Yeah, exactly. Once again, it's the Yir HaShamayim. He tells Eishes Potiphar, Yir HaShamayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted me to do this. As we said before, the Ramban in Perek Mem Zayin, what in the Parsha Yigash, what gives Yosef the capacity to open his son in terms of honesty? The Yir HaShamayim. And what gives him the koach here? He tells his brothers. Remember? He tells his brothers, no! HaKadosh Baruch Hu Elokim Chashav Al Tava. You meant bad. You had terrible, injurious intent. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu was in charge. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was in charge. HaKadosh Baruch Hu worked it out well. That type of Yir HaShamayim, that type of Bitachon, the type of seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your life, That's what gives a person the capacity to be able to own omid b'nisayon and to practice self-discipline, self-control in ways that otherwise seem beyond human capacity. The Yir Shamayim is what made it happen. Chaim, a question.
Yosef doesn't have any, like, moral responsibility to tell Yaakov about it. Isn't it, like, you know, keeping and holding information from his father?
Did Yosef have a moral responsibility to tell his father? Halachic responsibility. That's what we talked about before. And that's why that was an important caveat. There are situations where it is important and critical to share information. Again, abuse is a particularly extreme situation where there is unusually enormous toelas in sharing the information, in protecting future abuse victims, preventing future abuse. There are also less dramatic situations where also there could be, in more mild situations, there are plenty of situations where there is a toeles in sharing Lashon Hara. You know, we're talking some Gedalia, right? That Gemara Maseches Nida. That was a question of being Makabal Lashon Hara. Gedalia did not take seriously Yochanan's reports that Yishmael meant to assassinate him. And he was not, Yochanan correctly shared with Gedalia, your life is in danger. That was the right thing to share. And it was the wrong thing on Gedalia's part to ignore. Even when it's more mild than that. You know that someone's considering entering into a business partnership. Reuven is looking to go into business with Shimon, and you know that Shimon is either dishonest, or Shimon is unreliable, or Shimon is just unqualified or not competent. So there is a chiyuv to share. The Chafetz Chaim spends a lot of time on the halachas of toelas, of what qualifies as proper toelas to share information, and if there is a toelas, how do you share the information, to what extent do you share? And Shechter often says that, his illustration is, imagine, a family reaches out to you. There's a particular boy that was suggested for their daughter, and what do you think? He says, you know that this boy is Michal Shabbos. Absolutely a terrible fit. So, but you also know that this family would say no to the boy simply because he's not Nizer and Chal of Israel. So then you don't have to tell them that he's Michal Shabbos. You tell them he's not careful about Chal of Israel. Tell them enough information to accomplish the Tawelas. Tawelas is, this match should not go through. They need to know that's not the right boy for their daughter. So you tell them to the extent that they need to know. So there are plenty of halachas of what qualifies as Tawelas and how to do it in a way that's not, the Chafetz Chaim stresses that not only is only to the, you only share as much information as is necessary for whatever the desired Tawelas is, but also you want to be sure that you're sharing it l'shem shamayim to protect the other party, the toeles, and not because you have your own stuff and you have your own desire for revenge, and you're doing it for your own ulterior motives. There definitely are situations, plenty of situations, where there is information needs to be shared to protect someone else, physically, to protect someone else financially, to protect someone else socially. Whatever it is, reputationally, and then there are situations where there is no toilets, and that's apparently Yosef made the cheshbon. At this point, what's the telos? What purpose is served by telling my father? At this point, I'm safe. I'm okay. The story is behind us. Maybe I've told the father 20 years ago. Maybe there would have been some toilets. But at this point, it's all behind us. It's nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to change. He didn't think that the brothers needed to be reprimanded by his father. And they learned their lesson. He wasn't worried about that. So he made a cheshbon. What's the purpose? That leads to the way the Ramban is reading it. The Ramban understands that he did not know. Rav Chavel, I have in front of me the Chavel edition, the Masada of Cook, edition of the Ramban, the Rav Shaval's notes. So he points out that when the Ramban says you're at the beginning of this paragraph, you're royally a derech hapshat, he didn't know. So Rav Shaval writes, because in several midrashim, it's assumed that Yaakov did know. In the Birkas Yaakov, in Parshas Vayechi, several midrashim interpret different psukim as referring to Mechiras Yosef, Mitarif Bani Elisa, the Ikru Shar, several psukim in the Birkas Yosef, in Birkas Yaakov, that the midrashim understands is referring to Mechiras Yosef. So there are opinions that he did know, and that would assume either that he found out on his own, or the brothers themselves told him, or that Yosef maybe did feel there was some Tel Aser. The Ramban understands that there was no Tel Aser. It is often, I will say, Chaim, that there are many real life situations where it's often hard to make that. It's often inobvious. Is there Tawalas? Is there not Tawalas? It's often a difficult child. It often is something that... And often you got to bite the bullet. There's no... You can't just say, I'll be machmir. Because if there's no Tawalas, so then you should not be telling. If there is Tawalas, then dafki, you must tell. It's not just that you have the right to tell. If there's a Tawalas, you have to take care of that third party. So you will, or many of you will find in life, you'll find yourself in situations where like a sticky, you sort of find yourself in the middle of a sticky situation and you have to figure out, should I be telling, should I not be telling, how, to what extent, to whom, and it's often important to ask a shiloh. Not only to ask a shiloh because you have to work out the dinim of toelas, often it's more because you need the advice of a wise third party. You need the advice of a wise Talmud Chacham who's not in the situation himself and doesn't have the negius and can see things from the outside with perspective that's sometimes hard to have when I find myself within the situation. I need a third party to say, okay, let's look at this and let's figure this out. And that's important to do. That's what Jews do. You're in a sticky situation. You have a shiloh. You got a shiloh. And you can ask a wise, attuned Rav and tell him he doesn't have to need to know all the details. You can tell him, I'm in a situation, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, and here are the facts of the situation. He may ask, I need to know a little more about Reuven's personality, about the nuances between Shimon and Levi, and that's what a Jew does. He asks a Shalom. Absolutely.